Messiah's Branch Broadcast, a one-hour prophecy program on the American Voice Radio Network, featuring Pastor Dan of Messiah's Branch Ministry. And now, here's Pastor Dan.
Greetings, saints, and welcome to the Messiah's Branch Prophecy Hour. We're broadcasting live from the Flint Hills of Kansas, and we're on the American Voice Radio Network. Today's date is December 1st, 2016. Saints, the world is in turmoil. Most just don't realize it, but we are in that time of the end, and that's the time before Messiah's glorious return. So it's time to get out of sin, the world, and look to the holy city. Look to the one who suffered and died for you. Hear the sound of the shofar? Heed the warning. Get right now before it's too late. Please make this choice tonight. If you need help after the program, call me. I'll pray for you or with you. If you get the machine, please leave your name, your number, your prayer request, and or message. The phone number, of course, is 620-878-4682, 620-878-4682. Okay, anyway, in an emergency, sorry, folks, I got sidetracked there for a second. Okay, in an emergency, my cell phone number is 316-620-878. No, wait a minute. I'm so sorry. Boy, today, December 1st, today is just getting off really different, isn't it, folks? Trying to break from what's going on. But anyway, today we are coming to you live, of course, but in emergency, there's where we're at. In emergency, my cell phone number is 316-619-4886. Wow, what a day. Anyway, you can always find the updates with the breaking news, our ministry radio program archives, and our email address at our email address and our mailing address at our smartphone friendly blogs, which are prophecyhour.com, which is our main ministry hub. And if you want just audio archives, try messiahsbranch.org and branch.podomatic.com, which is where our archives are played and downloaded from no matter which link you use. Well, you know something, folks? I go by the same notes, and I change my call notes, and so things look different. And be careful not to press buttons when you're reading something, because Word deleted, like, over half of my notes, and so I had to hit a bunch of undo things to get back to where we're at. Remember, prayer requests can be sent by United States Postal Service and with an email with your return by email and with your return address and or your phone number to call you back. These requests will be taken to Wichita Mission Church, anointed with oil, prayed over, and sent back to you at your request with no solicitations for donations of any kind. And we have a prayer request form, which is on the right-hand side of our Prophecy Hour and our messiahsbranch.com pages. Remember, we are a national satellite radio program. A lot of people say, well, that's internet radio. Well, true, it does come on the internet, but first and foremost, it is a satellite radio program, which you can get on KU Band Satellite, which is really interesting because, you know, if they censor the internet, one of the few ways, at least for a while, that you'll be able to get our program uncensored would be coming through KU Band Satellite. So you should seriously consider getting one. You can get set up with a satellite system from Frank, and you all know who Frank is. That's our producer, and you know him from being on this program, and he has the Frank Report, and he says to me just now, he says, plus, we do have some FM stations that do pick us up also, so we're not just a internet program. Not that there's anything wrong with internet programs, but come on, we've been on the internet and putting radio archives up since way back. I started in radio in 2001, and I started putting up radio programs way back then. And so we've always put our archives on. A little bit later, they started calling them podcasts. Imagine that. But anyway, so we are an FM state. We are picked up by FM, and we are picked up we are broadcasting on satellite right now. And so we are a live radio program. So this is a little bit different than just the normal podcast that you would go to. Anyway, so having said all that, back to the December 1st thing. Wow, December 1st, this year's almost up. I don't know about you folks, but with me, I always have that little bit of a transitional problem, where you type so much stuff and you put this year instead of next year, and so we're going to have that. I look for 2017 to be a good year. We've already seen some good things, but don't forget, we're in the time of the end. And we'll be addressing that issue in the next program when we have Michael from the Economic Collapse blog on with us. And he thinks we're going to talk just about Israel and some things, but I'm going to ask him some hard questions because he has some other opinions on what may be happening. So it's going to be a good program. Make sure you turn in. That will be an hour after this program goes off. On another note, let's thank our listener base that is worldwide. Where are they at? They're in places like Beijing, China, New Delhi, India, Auckland, New Zealand. Can you imagine living in a place like Auckland? Well, I'm not picking on you folks in Auckland. It just seems funny to somebody here in the United States. Liverpool in the United Kingdom. I thought Liverpool was just England, Anyway, but the United Kingdom, that's what it really is. Anyway, Sydney, Australia, Moscow, Russia. That's a cool one. And, of course, cities in the United States such as Aurora, Illinois, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Fresno, California, Anaheim, California, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Anchorage, Northport, Alaska. Imagine that. Are y'all cold up there? I hear there's supposed to be a big cold thing coming in this year. Or not here, but this weekend, in fact, it's even going to hit Kansas. So, speaking of Kansas, let's not forget to thank our folks over there in Wichita, Kansas, which still remains a larger group of listeners to our radio programs when they podcast, that is, later on tonight. I wonder here. Okay, now then, let's move right along. We're ready for a prayer, I guess, and then we'll start talking about tonight's program and what we're going to do. We do have a special guest. First, a prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, in Yeshua HaMashiach's name I pray. Father, I pray that radio tonight goes according to your will and not my will, and nor my guest's will, Father. And please give everyone out there ears in which to hear the truth. So in Yeshua HaMashiach's name, amen and amen. Well, folks, so many of them are watching this great turmoil across the earth, and we're sidetracked with things. We're looking at terrorism and things at schools and malls and other public places, and we're sidetracked here. We had the election, and boy, wasn't that something. What a battle between good and evil. By the way, that battle's still going on, and while I believe that America was given an opportunity for change and repentance by having this president, it's going to be us to actually do it. So if we don't repent and we don't turn away from our sin and we just say, hey, everything's great, it's going to be a real surprise. But there's some other things going on. With all these things going on, people seem to neglect that there's some really strange things around the world. And they've actually, people think, well, those are just now happening, but they've been going on now and since the beginning of time. In fact, just right under our noses in some instances. And so tonight we're going to talk about some of those things. Things like, Yeshua said, it would be as in the days of Noah. And what was going on in the days of Noah? Nephilim were walking the earth. And if you don't know what a Nephilim is, a Nephilim talks about in Genesis 6. They, while a lot of Bibles just say giants, if you look up the word, you find out that it's a crossbreed between a fallen angel, and, you know, a fallen angel and a human being. And that's some really strange things. So can you see any examples? Nephilims are actually embedded into our culture. You know how that is? Well, guess who is one of the number one Nephilims of all time? Well, that would be... that would be more along the lines of a fallen angel. But, you know, you have people like Hercules. You know, he's part God and part, he's part God and he's part, human being. And so those things are embedded into our culture. And I believe they got embedded so much into our culture so that we, would be numb to those things. But there's one person, you know, I was actually looking for some different things, because let me tell you what, the prophecy world out there got stood on its head when Obama looks like he's leaving office and everything. But so I was out there looking. I thought, well, there's lots of other things to talk about in the prophecy world. And so I was looking yesterday for someone to be on with me to talk about some of these other strange things. And while I was looking for new people, you know, I kept coming across our guest name tonight, and he's been on with us many times. I thought, well, let's just see if he's busy, because he is one of the most accurate experts of these strange things that are going on. So I'm going to check and see if he is ready yet to come on, because we had to give him about a 5-minute lag, and I think that has expired. So let's try and go ahead and talk about him. Okay, tonight we bring on him with us one of the most accurate experts, and he is an author, researcher, lecturer, and host of the Watcher Series, which is a great program that proves many things, like the finding of the graveyards that clearly could have been the remains of amphibians, and we're going to talk about DNA test of giants, as well as a very strange story in Afghanistan. Let's just bring on L.A. Marzulli. Are you there with me, L.A.?
I certainly am. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Well, I'm really glad. You know, and like I was saying, I was scanning the internet to try to find somebody new to talk about these things. And you know what? Every time I did a search, your name was in the first page of it, and I went, well, really? Why don't I just get L.A. on? So, so what's been going on with you since we talked last?
Well, I was just at the Serpent Mound, and I posted a video on my YouTube account, which is L.A. Marzulli, by the way. And the Serpent Mound is in Peebles, Ohio. It's a very interesting area. I've been there twice. This is the second time that I was there. I filmed myself on there, and we've already had, like, it's been less than 24 hours since we put this show up. It's about 28 and a half minutes on my YouTube channel. We've already had about 5,000 views. So it's very enigmatic, because it shows an undulating serpent, and it's a very large mound. In fact, it's so long and so large that you really can only see it from the air. There is a two-story observation tower there, but even when you're up in that at the very top, you still really can't see the head clearly. So the reason why I went there is because I just felt that I had new information, and I wanted to film there. I've never really filmed there, per se. I took still photographs, but I never did any walkthrough filming, and that's, of course, what this was. And after the show, your audience can go to the YouTube channel and watch it for themselves. But here's the bottom line. Here's the bottom line for me, that archaeologists have really, if they're intellectually honest, they have no idea who built this thing. I interviewed a man whose grandmother was like 104 years old or something, and when she passed away, and this guy's been there, his whole family has been in that area literally for decades, over a right. century, but they're in the area. And this man came on the record and told me that when his grandmother was a little girl, so now we're back like, you know, 90 years, and so at the turn of a century, this is way out in the middle of nowhere, 1910, something like that. So it's the boonies. It still is the boonies. But back then, it's like really the boonies. And this woman is hearing uncles and aunts and grandfathers who go back another 60 years So now we're around the Civil War. And this man came on the record and told me that, to the best of his knowledge, when Native Americans were asked about who built this mound, they said it was ancient. They said it was ancient. It was here before they got here. And that's very, very telling. It's extremely telling, because what that shows me is that, first of all, to the best of my knowledge, Native Americans did not construct edifices like this. They just didn't do it. But the archaeologists will insist that they did. And we see the same thing down in Peru in places like Sacsayhuaman. What if it's not? And Sacsayhuaman is in Peru, about 12,000 to 13,000 feet above sea level. We see these large, enigmatic, megalithic, huge stones, some of them weighing well over 100 tons, you know, 120 tons, 150 tons. Very, very large.
And curiosity.
The Americans, and it begs the question, who built this and why? Mainstream archaeologists insist that the Inca built it. But when you go back and look at the conquistadors, when the conquistadors, the Spanish 1492, that era after Columbus sort of discovers a new world, they asked the Inca, who built this? The Inca said the giants built it. It was here when we got here. And it's the same thing that we hear echoed at the Serpent Mound in Peebles, Ohio. Who built this? Well, we don't know. It's ancient. It was here when we got here. And while I was there, and just so you guys know, I mean, this stuff's incredible, that the serpent is undulating. The serpent is above ground.
Right.
It's 4 to 5 feet above ground. It's this mound, and it's all crafted, and the tail spirals, and then the serpent undulates. And the undulations of the serpent point either to the summer solstice, the longest day of the year, the shortest day of the year, the winter solstice, the equinoxes, the lunar rising and the waxing and waning of the moon. And it depicts a very large serpent and in the act of what appears to be swallowing an egg. Now, New Agers will say exactly the opposite. No, it's really not what it is. The serpent denotes wisdom. The serpent is in the act of giving birth to this egg, and the egg is the world, and it's knowledge and knowledge for mankind. And I look at that and go, that's just nonsense. We go back to the Genesis 3:15 biblical prophetic narrative. And what we hear in that narrative, in that scene, because it's in the garden, right after Adam and Eve have been deceived by the serpent, there's the serpent again. And I believe it's the pre-incarnate Yeshua who is standing there in the garden with them. And he says, look, here's the deal. I'm just sort of paraphrasing here. The seed of a serpent, he says, your seed, turning into a serpent, will be at war, will be at enmity with the seed of the woman. We know, thousands of years later, the seed of the woman becomes Mashiach, becomes Messiah. We know that. But the seed of a serpent, only three chapters later, begins to manifest on the planet. And it manifests in the form of a Nephilim. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days and also afterwards. When the sons of God, who, by the way, are the fallen angels of heaven, but they can also be the good angels. It's B'nai HaElohim in the Hebrew, which just denotes the angelic host of heaven. So when the sons of God saw the daughters of men that they were beautiful, they desired them and chose wives from whomever they wished. And they married them and went into them in the biblical sense. And the offspring were these giants, these Nephilim. And then it says, and the Nephilim are on the earth in those days, and also afterwards when, now it tells you exactly when the sons of God saw the daughters of men and took wives and went into them and had children by them. These were the mighty men of old. These were the demigods that roamed the planet. And I've written a book on this called The Cosmic Chess Match, which gets into this in much, much more detail than we have the time to cover. But getting back to Peebles, that glyph, in my opinion, and I had an interesting email from a gentleman yesterday, in fact, he heard me on Coast to Coast, stating that the Lord told him about 5 years ago that the serpent mound was there, and the serpent was constructed to show that the serpent would prevail over the seed of the woman, would destroy the seat of the woman. And, of course, that's what I think we're looking at in that very large glyph in Peebles, Ohio, which, by the way, you can really only see it from above. You can't see it. You can't appreciate it from down on the ground. You must be above it to see it, as many of these ancient sites are. Who is the prince of the power of the air? That's Satan himself, the fallen cherub. And so as we delve into this, we realize that the serpent is in the act of destroying the egg so that prophecy would not be fulfilled. Why the serpent? The serpent, it's a global phenomenon. The serpent is everywhere. There are serpent cults, Chichen Itza serpent cults. We see the serpent motif in Peru. We see the serpent motif in faraway places in the Middle East. It is everywhere, absolutely everywhere. And, of course, who is the serpent? And the serpent is the one that got us all in all this trouble. And shamans know that and the Kundalini serpent spirit, which yogis right. in the Middle East know, that there's power there. But the power and the knowledge that comes from the serpent always comes with a price. And, of course, that's your eternal soul. So while I was there, I came up with this theory.
We're going to have to go to break in about a minute.
Okay.
So why don't you get the best website for you and tell them where they can find this video that you just put up one more time, and then we'll go to break.
The video is at my YouTube channel, L.A. Marzulli. Just go type L.A. Marzulli on YouTube, and up it will come. It's also on PPS Report. You can find it there, ppsreport.com. You can go to the blog, lamarzulli.wordpress.com, and find it there. Three places to choose from.
All right, well, folks, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in 3 minutes with more of L.A. This is Pastor Dan Catlin, and you're listening to Messiah's Bridge Prophecy Hour on the American Voice Radio Network. Well, I laugh because I guess I'm in a good mood, but remember, pray tonight about a donation for work with the homeless and poor from our mission church in Wichita, Kansas. Well, let's talk a minute about Thanksgiving. We're going to make a quick one of this, but Thanksgiving, really, we were trying to, going back last week, remember, we were the last time we talked on radio, trying to raise money to get the finale of the dinner. Well, we thought we had turkeys. We didn't. Money never comes in until the last minute. And it's always a surprise at where it comes from. Well, this time, I got an email like 2 days before from one of our earliest, in fact, I don't want to reveal his identity, but let's go with one of the earliest supporters of this ministry when we started feeding the homeless and poor. And he also sells freeze-dried food. But anyway, he sent me an email and he wanted to know how much my wife needed to finish off the dinner for Thanksgiving. I asked her, make a long story short, told him, and then the next day he wired the money in over here, although it took us a while to get, you know, the right coordinates over to him because we're not used to people wiring to our bank account. But we got it done, and so Thanksgiving, yeah, it was really good. We had a wonderful Thanksgiving. Actually, we have a YouTube video up about it. You can look at it and see it if you want. If you go to our YouTube channel, find it at prophetyhour.com. There's a link to it. But anyway, we also had some other donations come in for Thanksgiving. So Thanksgiving was a real blessed 2 days. We did Thanksgiving Thursday and Friday, and it was a real blessing. And, you know, of course, it was a blessing not only for the people, but for us, because we love to serve the Father by serving others. You know, during Thanksgiving, we also gave out heavy-duty winter gloves and socks and stocking hats. Well, we didn't really need them that bad last week. We are going to need them tomorrow. Kansas, you know, we're coming under, possibly Wichita may get its first snow of the year, which means folks around the country, I guess you're going to get real snow. Anyway, but we are faced with December. This is December 1st. And December, since the economic crash that happened right about at Obama, December's became one of the slowest months of the year. You know, people just don't have the money to do holidays and donate to us because, you know, we're not considered usually as somebody's first donation point because most of our listeners are believers in Yeshua and they tie to their local churches and prayerfully their local charities. And so we're a secondary donation. And so, you know, they don't always get to donate to that secondary donation, especially when, you know, there's not a lot of money to spread around and there's different expenses in December, which, by the way, of course, December 25th is going to be a twofold event this year because while mainstream Christianity celebrates Christmas, others are celebrating, you know, Hanukkah. The first day of Hanukkah falls on December 25th. And, you know, we celebrate Hanukkah, which is, you know, the light came into the world, the feast of dedication, and we believe Yeshua was conceived on that. But so Christianity and Messianics and everybody, we're going to be celebrating on the same day, and it's all going to be, it's supposed to be about Yeshua. So pray about supporting Wichita Mission Church. Why would you do that? Because we are the last hope for so many. And, folks, we are responsible to care one for another, as we are brothers keepers. All donations, no matter what size, helps. And the Father notices all donations that come from where? Your heart. If you don't wish to help with the poor, well, consider a donation for radio airtime. As like we told you at the first of this program, we're on some FM stations. We are on satellite radio. Airtime is not free. And this ministry sells nothing. We are just able to be on the air because of your kind donations. You can donate online or mail a check or money order, and you can find all that information at prophecyhour.com, prophecyhour.com. And now we're back with L.A. Marzulli. Are you there with us, L.A.?
I certainly am.
Just real brief before we go back into anything, you were on last night with, you know, that live program?
Coast to Coast?
Yeah, Coast to Coast. I had a brain, you know what? Aneurysm, we'll call it. But yeah, Coast to Coast AM last night. How did that go last night?
Well, it was really good. I was on for 2 hours, and you know, we talked about the Serpent Mound and what it may or may not be. Of course, all this is, if you want to get more in depth, you can go to the video or you can pick up the book, Nephilim Hybrid, which has that whole paradigm, you know, written out in Watchers 10, and also Nephilim Hybrid, the book. But here's the deal. And this is, I've never heard anyone ever say this. So it's sort of a new idea, a new hypothesis. We're led to believe by archaeologists that Native Americans took birch bark baskets, and clam shells, and dug into the earth with the clam shells, and transported those buckets of earth one at a time to an area. And over a period of 50, 100 years, whatever, they built these edifices. Okay, I get that, but I don't see any evidence of that, in my opinion, especially if some of the dirt is brought in from, let's say, over a mile away. Now we're into a very enigmatic phenomenon. Something is going on here. I'm a frank supernaturalist, as many of your listeners who have heard me before probably know. I believe that the supernatural is more real than the natural world around us. And that being stated, as Christians, we believe that Yeshua rose from the dead, that he walked on water, that he changed water to wine. We believe in staffs that when they were thrown down by Moses, Moshe, they became serpents, and the Egyptians could mimic that plague. In fact, the magicians in Egypt could mimic the first three plagues that were sent by God. We believe in talking donkeys and floating axes and two gold coins that appear out of the mouths of fish. And we have no problem believing it because it's all in our Bibles, okay? That being said, we know that when an angel appears to John the Baptist, he shuts his mouth. John the Baptist Zechariah, his father, is not able to speak until the child is born. He says his name is John. How does that work? How is it that Elijah's servant, his eyes are opened up? How is it that Elijah is taken up in a whirlwind? How is it that Enoch is translated? I mean, these are mysteries. And it hails back and discusses and talks and points back to the supernatural. With that in mind, here's my new hypothesis. I believe that the stones and socks they were on were levitated. They were cut and levitated. I call it Nephilim architecture, fallen angel technology. I believe that that same technology was then used at Peebles, Ohio, and it made the dirt dance. It made the dirt dance. And this dirt was levitated, and it was funneled and shaped by entities which do not belong here, do not originate from here. And I know, realize that sounds absolutely incredible. And I understand that. But so does a floating axe head or a talking donkey or a man that walks on water. So you tell me where we're supposed to draw the line with the supernatural. And I believe that all the mounds in the Americas were constructed this way. I don't think birch bark baskets and dog sleds had anything to do with it. I really don't.
Well said. Very well said, Ellie. And, you know, I haven't heard anybody point it out. What I have seen is various people over the years, and I've been doing this since the early 90s, you know, into the prophecy thing and the Nephilims and all that. And I've seen so many people come up with different things like, you know, different kinds of lifts and all kinds of mechanical things that a man would dream up to, whether it's to cut stone and transport that stone. But using what you just used, you explain that explains pyramids and everything else that are so hard to believe. I also like the way that you put it. Why shouldn't we be able to believe this if we believe our Bible? Because, you know, not many people talk about the Bible like that in that sense, but it's the truth. We believe all the supernatural things, or we should be believing all the supernatural things of the Bible. So did that, you know, when did that stop, cease, or isn't there other things? Back to you.
Well, that's the whole point. It didn't. And this is where we get into trouble, especially as a church, when we sit in and we read all these scriptures week after week after week. We have a form of religion but deny its power. We never travel in the supernatural. We don't want to have the Holy Spirit really show up or actually have something that happened like the book of Acts. It's too sloppy. It's too messy. We want our little, you know, 45-minute deal and then get out and get something to eat for lunch, sing a few songs, have a couple of hugs, and off we go. And, you know, in some churches, they actually preach the word, go figure, which is rare these days. And I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek. I love the church. I'm part of the church, but it needs to be reformed, drastically needs to be reformed. But that's, nevertheless, that's where we are. And I'm a French supernaturalist, and I think that the vestiges of a Nephilim are global. And all we need to do is peel back the layers of Darwinism, which has basically obfuscated anything to do with the supernatural. And there you have it.
Well, amen. So, so a lot of people are going to say, or do say, and we have, you know, people have probably never even heard some of this stuff, is number one is, so why, this is actually a cover-up. There's a cover-up of the Nephilim. What, for the people, of course I know, for the people, why is it covered up that there's giants and all of these things? That's you.
Wait, I'm not sure of the question. Say that again.
Okay. Why is there a worldwide and ongoing cover-up of all of these things, like the Nephilim, the giants, and, you know, hiding these things? Why is
that? Well, it's very simple. It goes against the Darwinian paradigm. Anything that goes against the Darwinian paradigm can't be there. Anything that points back to the validity and the veracity of the supernatural can't be there, must be dealt with, right? And that's right. Everything is guarded if they manage the agenda, as Chuck Missler would say.
Well, you know, believing in the age that we're in, do you think that this will burst at the seams? Do you think that we're going to see these things again in our time?
Well, I think they're already here. I mean, I've got reports that have come across my desk, and we've talked about this in Watchers 10, the very large Afghan giant that we've had. We've had multiple witnesses now. Steve Quayle had a witness, the pilot that flew the thing out. We've got the shooter that brought the thing down. Another guy came on the record and basically told us that he heard rumors like this. So look, I mean, this is I'm not making this stuff up, guys. I'm not making it up, and that's part of the problem. You know, it's just the supernatural is real, and anything. Okay. That deals with the supernatural, that would reveal the supernatural.
Right. Well, you know, pointing back to Watchers 10, and folks, you ought to get that. You can find it at his blog, of course. But this Afghan giant, this is really fascinating. Maybe we take a couple of minutes to tell some of that story so that people know what you're talking about, because, wow, that was really is ongoing. Back to you.
What are you talking about? The giant of Afghanistan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, please. Talk
a
little.
The giant of Afghanistan, let me give you the backstory here. A number of years ago, Steve Quayle broke a story on his website and also on Coast to Coast, talking about that there was a pilot, an airplane pilot, who said off the record, like most of these guys, they will not come on the record, that he flew out a giant from Afghanistan that had been shot by our troops. Now, you know, that's unbelievable. And so he went on Coast to Coast and stated this, and Steve Quayle was there. And, you know, when I first heard this, and who wouldn't be? You're somewhat skeptical. You've got to be kidding. A Nephilim at 12 to 15 feet tall running around on the planet? That's wacky. That's wacky stuff. And with that in mind, I listened to it. I talked to Steve about it when he first published that book. And we let it alone. And the co-producer of the Watchers series, Richard Shaw, was on a show. And this caller called in, and the caller wound up staying on after the show was over. They had a discussion. And in the course of discussing different things, he stated that he was one of the shooters that shot the Afghan giant. And, of course, that's crazy. I mean, that's just crazy stuff. So Rick got his number, and I called him the next day, and thus began, like, a screening process with this man. And he comes in on the record anonymously in Watchers 10 and tells us what happened, what he saw. And every time he gets to this one part of the story, he breaks down. So he's either a very, very good actor or he's telling the truth. And I very strongly lean towards the man telling me the truth. I've sat down with this guy. I've known him for now more than a year. And I believe him. I don't think he's pulling our leg or conducting an elaborate ruse. I think it's real, and here's the story. There was a platoon in 2001 that were in the mountains above Afghanistan, the Kandahar province, looking for high-value targets in caves, very remote areas. They were dropped off by helicopter, and they began to hike. They missed their first rally point, their check-in. They missed the second rally point, and on it goes. To the end of the day, no one knows where these guys are. Did they get ambushed? Are they captive? Are they all dead? No one knows. The next morning, another platoon is dispatched, and this man who comes on the record with us, we'll just call him the shooter, stated that they were dropped off in the same locale. They had no trouble following the path that the first platoon went on, and after a while, they began to descend this goat path which led them to a ledge which overlooked the valley below. It was at least 1,000 feet up. And as they're there, they're kind of dispersed on this ledge, and above them is a cave, very large cave. Out of the cave comes a nightmare, a 12-foot, red-haired, six-fingered, double-rows-of-teeth giant brandishing a very long, menacing spear and a shield. Everyone is frozen. One of the guys snaps out of it, begins to run towards this giant, shooting his rifle at the time. The giant moves with such speed and agility that the shooter can't believe it. And before anyone can do anything, the giant has this guy dangling from the end of his spear. He's run him through with his spear, and he's dangling in the air. And somebody yells, "Shoot him in the head, shoot him in the head." And they open fire, and they bring the giant down. They basically shot his face off. That's what killed him. They shot his face off. At this part of the story, the man who was impaled is still alive. They call a medevac. The man succumbs to his wounds. Now their head clears. The whole firefight took less than 30 seconds. They're overcome by the stench of this thing. It smelled like a pile of dead bodies, as powerful as a skunk, but not a skunk, more like a pile of dead bodies. It was at least 12 feet tall. And so we've got the pilot who flew this thing out saying it was about 1,200 pounds. We've got the shooter who says he was there and shot the thing. Then we've got a third witness who was deployed to Afghanistan, came on the record and told us that when he was there in Kandahar, there were rumors about a giant that was killed by their troops, that impaled someone. So the story is the same. George knew the story because the pilot told the same story to George, that apparently the giant wasn't friendly. That's why he was shot. He impaled somebody. So the story has been repeated by three different people. There's no collusion between the three. And we went with it. And, you know, in my way of thinking, it's not that far out. Because Afghanistan, when you look at a map, is somewhat close to what I would call, Nephilim Central in the Middle East.
Right. Right. It's the Middle East. It's just right there. So absolutely. Yeah. Let alone the country, Afghanistan. I mean, you know, there's a lot, hiding places, so to speak. You know, it's not like America, where, you know, there's not really a lot of hiding places, so it really makes a lot of sense. Back to you.
Well, it does. It does make a lot of sense. And, you asked if they're here, are we going to see them again? Well, I think it's a breeding program by these so-called extraterrestrials. We covered this in our Watcher series, specifically Watcher 7 and 8, where we took out the implant, which was incredibly unnerving to actually sit in a in an operating theater and watch what comes down. I mean, it was just unbelievably unnerving. And we removed the implant. So we know that these things are real. And whoever is doing it, there's a concerted effort to bring about a breeding program. If women are abducted in the extraterrestrial, by so-called extraterrestrials, ovum is taken. If it's the men, sperm is taken. So something is going on here. And it's, in my opinion, it's incredibly nefarious. I mean, incredibly nefarious. And it hails back to the Nephilim. I'm working on my first independent film. It's a series called The Watchmen Chronicles. And the first one is on UFOs. It's called In Their Own Words. And it's a dirty little secret that the church doesn't want to talk about. But in most congregations, as a low 5%, as a high 35%. So let's round it down to about 18% of the people in your congregation have seen lights in the sky, UFOs, had experiences, sleep paralysis. That number is way too high. And it's time for the church to start dealing with it, and that's what the movie will be about, is to, it's in their own words. It's me interviewing people that have had experiences, never come on camera, never told their story before, but they trust me, and they're coming on camera. And it will be out in March.
Well, absolutely can't wait to do an interview about that and see it. But in brief, let me say something. You know, what I've been running across is, you know, like for one, there was this kid that had left this church. He was really into the father and son, and he did everything right. He got married and, you know, was a virgin when he got married. And she started studying the Old Testament, and he just couldn't take it because he couldn't believe the slaughter that Yahweh was telling the Israelite people to do of these people. But that church that he was in wouldn't tell him the whole truth. They wouldn't tell him about, you know, the mixed seed and the men's need for cleansing. And so this is really information that the church needs desperately, don't you think?
Well, this is vital information. It's information that people in the church need to hear, get their head around, and be taught, because they perish if they don't understand the seed war and what we read about in Genesis 3:15. What are you going to do when you get to statements that we read about in Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21? What are you going to do with that? It'll be like the days of Noah. What the heck does that mean? And there's so much, in my opinion, which is just absolute faulty exegesis in regards to this. Holy, we're eating and drinking. Who is the they? Who are eating and drinking? And this is why understanding Genesis 3:15 and then Genesis 6 is so vital, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. It's vital. It is vital. Okay, L.A., what's the most important things that people can pick up from you? Other than, of course, folks, you need to get the Watchers series, period. But what else can we find at your blogs? You've got about 2 minutes to finish up.
Well, you know, we've got the Watchers 10-pack, all 10 plus a bonus DVD. You know, there's so much information there, folks. Go to lamarzulli.net, and give a gift with meaning. My gosh, I mean, if you're going to celebrate Hanukkah or Christmas or whatever, I don't want to argue about all that. For me, the holiday is about Jesus, period. I don't care where it originates from or anything else. I mean, I get it. I've read Hislop, and I get the whole deal. Trust me, I do. But for me, I remember Jesus. I remember his birth. I know he wasn't born in December. I totally get it, completely get it. But we give gifts in recognition of that. That's what in our culture. And it may be all wrong, but that's our culture. So unless we completely, you know, steer the boat in another direction, the reason for the season, the reason for the gift is to celebrate the birth of Messiah, period. Yes. That's it. That's all I'm doing here. So stone me in the parking lot if you don't like that. But that's it. And we give gifts. And it's not commercialized and it's wacky and crazy and everything else. So give a gift that means something. Give people Nephilim Hybrid's book or the Watchers 10 or any of the Watchers. I mean, or On the Trail of the Nephilim. I mean, I've got a new book out, which will come out on the 19th, called The Sunday Bun. It's my little sermonette that I've compiled in one book. It's really pithy. And they're short. You know, you pick the thing up, you read one a day, you get fed. You get fed the word. And it's important. Give gifts that have meaning instead of a scarf or a tie or, you know, the usual nonsense. And by doing that, it helps us do what we're doing here, too.
Yeah, amen. I agree with you totally, and you know what? That's why I was saying at the first of this program before you came on, I was saying how, you know, both Hanukkah and Christmas falls on the same day, and it's all about Yeshua. So, you know, let's do a gift that means something. Well, L.A., I'm glad to have you on. I really can't wait to see the new thing coming out in March, but we're going to have to get out of here.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
All right. You be blessed. Bye-bye. Well, folks, L.A. Marzulli, but remember, there is only one God. He is your father. He's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. His son is Yeshua HaMashiach. He gave his life for repented sins. He rose after 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. And through him, and only through him, it's through the Father. Folks, remember Yeshua. Watch what you should remember this month. Forget about, just remember Yeshua. But you should remember him every day. Remember, always, always, always be a blessing to others. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. That's like praying for Messiah's return. Lord our God, Father, King in the universe, Father, I ask in Yeshua HaMashiach's name that you would bless and keep them, and that your face would shine upon them, and that you would be gracious to them and give them peace like no one or nothing else can. Until an hour from now, this is Pastor Dan saying goodbye and shalom.
You've just heard the Messiah's Branch broadcast featuring Pastor Dan. To contact Dan on the internet, go to messiahsbranch.org. To write to Dan, send a note to Messiah's Branch, 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Tune in next time for the Messiah's Branch.